Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a focus today on a daring rescue 3 years ago during wildfire season in California that had the commander-in-chief flying out within a week to decorate seven courageous men with the Distinguished Flying Cross. We'll get back to some of the rescuers' perspectives in a moment, but first let's hear from one of the more than 250 people rescued that night. Alex Tetamonte had been enjoying the majestic scenery of the Sierra Nevada mountains with friends and family when the quickly spreading Creek Fire turned her birthday celebration and an annual tradition into an apocalyptic nightmare in September 2020.
I made the 911 call. And I let them know, like, we have a lot of kids with us, a lot of families with us. We're stopped trying to get to the lake. You know, there's trees that have fallen down that have barricaded us between the campsite and the lake. And the 911 operator just kept saying, like, get to the water, get to the water. The car in front of us was able to, we have big, big off-roading trucks with like big grills and stuff like that. It rammed into this tree that had fallen a couple times back and forth. And the tree finally like broke open and we were able to drive through it. Well, on the way to the lake, while there's people running by our car, once we're able to start moving, me and my husband tell people, get in the car, like get in our truck, get in the back. There's one point during my 911 call, she asks how many people I had in the vehicle, and I had crawled up onto the center console sitting closest to my husband so that people could get in the passenger side. Our whole back was filled. We had people on laps, on laps, on laps, and my dog was back there somewhere, probably on somebody's lap or somebody was sitting on his lap, but I think I counted 15 to or 17, something like that, people in the truck of my, in the bed, in the cab of my truck.
Wow.
And I know there was another five or six. I know there was two people in the dog kennel, I heard, that we have a Mastiff. So we have a very large dog kennel, and two guys had crawled into the dog kennel in order to be able to fit more people into the bed of our truck also. So we don't even know how many people. We had people hanging on to the doors, like from the outside of the vehicle. We just had as many people as we could once we were able to start moving. We were trying not to leave anybody behind. And as soon as we got down to the lake, it's kind of like that deep breath, like, okay, well, at least we're near the water. At least there's no trees going to fall on us. That was the scariest part while we were driving, is I was afraid a tree that was on flames. We had fire not even 10 feet from both sides of the car as we were driving to the lake and trees falling. So I was really afraid we were going to get stuck there, a tree fall on us, something. So as we got to the lake, that's kind of like the first sigh of relief, like, okay, well, we're not going to get trapped right there. And I started thinking, like, okay, we have to be smart with how much food we have, how much water we have, because we're going to be up here for a while. It's going to take a while for them to get to us. So we started, you know, walking around, checking on people, making sure that our entire group was there and safe, you know, helping out other people in other groups. It was daylight when we got there. And then it was quite a few hours of daylight. And then, you know, it got dark. And it wasn't until after it was dark for a while that the helicopters got there. So I would say they probably got there about 9-10 o'clock. And that was just, you know, the first helicopter. It's crazy. When we heard the propellers, is that what they're called?
The rotors.
The noise of the helicopters in the distance. It was like, do you hear that or am I going crazy? And then my husband was like, no, I hear that. Is that a helicopter? And he's like, yeah, they're probably just coming to see like where we're at, and or they're probably coming to drop us water and food or something. But never in a million years did we think that helicopter was going to land and take us out of there. So that was pretty crazy when it started getting lower and lower. We were like, oh, my God, it's coming. We heard the rotors from the helicopter and saw the lights from it. Everybody started cheering and screaming. People were honking their horns. We had flashlights, cell phones, car lights, everything. Everybody was trying to, like, flash and wave so the helicopters could see that there's people down here. So once the helicopters landed, I ran up to one of the helicopters and I let them know as best I could. It was really, really loud next to a military helicopter. But I let them know as best I could, like, we have a trailer full of people that have burns, injuries, broken bones. Like, we have people that need to go right now, like, as fast as they can to the nearest hospital. And he asked, one of the guys asked me, like, how many people are here? And I'm trying to show him with my hands, like, 300. And so I do like 30. And after I did 30, he like gave me a thumbs up. And I was like, no, not 30, like 300, 300. And I kept saying, like, I don't know if he understood me. I don't know if he understood me. And I mean, obviously they figured out there was a lot of people there, but we did have the people that needed medical attention get out quickly on the first helicopter, and then the women with the smallest babies, I think we had a 7-month-old, a 9-month-old, and there was a couple other pretty small babies there. We had them on the Black Hawk, which was a little bit smaller. And then I was on the next round of helicopters, the helicopter that was packed to the brim. Me and my husband and our dog were on that helicopter. Funny little side note is we weren't sure that they were allowing the dogs to come on the helicopter. We didn't know if they were like, no, humans only. And so, you know, that puppy was like my little baby at the time. We wrapped him up in a blanket and pretended like he was a little baby, and we were holding him. But he's not, even at 9 months old, he was about 40, 45 pounds. So he was a big, heavy baby holding him. later we found out, of course, like anything with a pulse was allowed to get on the helicopter. But me and my husband were some of the last people to board on that helicopter. They couldn't get the ramp up in the back. And they put, I felt like it was like a 2-inch toe strap across the back. And me and my husband were like against the toe strap, looking over the edge of the helicopter as it's taking off. And it was like, okay, we survived a fire, but are we going to survive this helicopter ride? Looking back on it now that, like, I'm like, okay, we're safe. It was actually pretty cool. We could look down and, well, morbidly cool, maybe. Could look down and see the fire. I mean, it was nighttime, so you could just see everything glowing, and I'm sure the pilots were stressed and white knuckling it, but so were we in the back holding the dog against the toe strap. And there was a mom next to me that was holding her kid, not a baby, but like maybe like a 5 or 6-year-old kid, so pretty big, and she was holding her, and I was holding the mom, and my husband was holding the dog, and we were all holding on to each other just because that back of that plane was pretty, I mean, one little movement and, you know, it's like a wave. Everybody moves. So that was pretty crazy.
Boy, I can't even imagine. And that's a real powerful description of it. And since then, in the 3 years since, I know you've learned a lot about what those pilots and their crews were dealing with, and that there were some who thought it was too risky for them to come in and get you. What's the most amazing part of all of it to you with everything you know now?
With everything I know now, first that, oh, this might make me emotional. First, that the pilots were willing to risk their lives for people they don't know, people they've never met. That's like, you got to be a good human to be able to put that aside. And I mean, they have their own lives, their own families. And the fact that they would risk all of that for us. I did not expect that. Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
There are so many reasons. The emotions are still so powerful 3 years later. We'll hear more from Alex Tedamonte before we're done. But back to one of the rescuers now, Irvin Hernandez, in the cockpit of a Black Hawk helicopter through the smoke and the flames. Irvin, are there some moments from that 17-hour marathon of this risky rescue that stand out to you?
Yes, there's actually three moments that I remember every time the Creek Fire comes back up. The initial arrival, the first iteration that we popped out, out of the, kind of popping out of the smoke into the reservoir, very apocalyptic, fire, embers all around, people in the water, vehicles there, and then landing. And knowing when the crew chief got out, realizing these people are panicking, and for my crew chief to go down there and be able to rally them and corral them away from our tail rotor, which is a dangerous area to come up on, if you don't know. And then just seeing those people coming in, people that are limping, people that are asphyxiating because of the smoke, women and children. I remember seeing an infant on, I believe, the second iteration. We landed here. I looked back, and there was a mother sitting there with her child, no more than like a year old at most. And just seeing the gratification in her eyes and knowing that I have my own children, that really sat with me.
And just you telling that story makes me wonder how often over these last three years you've thought about those people that were on your Black Hawk that are alive today because your crew went in and got them. How often do you think about them?
Constantly, actually. Every time there's somebody brings it up from the Creek Fire or whenever we're flying around, because that is our local area. We fly in those mountains constantly. So every time we go up there, we see the scorch that was left, and it brings back those memories.
Well, I got to ask you about the president. This is not a political appearance. This is the commander-in-chief coming to honor you guys for risking your lives to save 264 of your fellow citizens. What was that day like for you?
It was surreal. And I kind of still don't believe that happened to me. I'm just a guy that came out of Parlier, a small town, working in the fields growing up, and being able to be in that position, very surreal. I'm very honored. A bit of me was like, this is my job. Do you recognize for me just doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Don't really know whether I deserve it or not. Again, I'm just doing my job to be recognized for just doing my job. That's what I signed up for. That's what I decided to become a pilot, to help people, to help my country, kind of. But at the end of the day, I'm very honored that happened. The whole event just was great, very memorable for myself, for my family. They were very proud of me for being in that situation. Just an honor to be in front of the president, and just be in the presence of the president, as Mr. Gonick said. It was just very kind of overwhelming, but very rewarding as well.
If you have to dress up and you wear your uniform with that Distinguished Flying Cross on it, what comes to mind when you see that, when you put that in place on your uniform?
Pride in the part that I played in it, and knowing that there's an event, there's families that were affected that led me to get that. It doesn't represent, for me, not so much the award itself, but it represents all the families that are still here because of that. Something to me that I've always wanted to recognize, all the people that weren't recognized with us as a crew. There was a lot of people on the ground that were helping us, making us successful. For example, our flight operations that came in to help us, they were the ones calling the fire department, the ambulances, the medevacs and all that, coordinating cots and all that, helping the people as we offloaded them, situating them and rallying them up. Those people were a big driving factor. It wasn't just us picking them up, but the people on the ground that were doing all the additional legwork.
In the podcast edition of this episode at hometownheroesradio.com, you can hear some bonus material from one of those people on the ground, then Colonel, now General, David Hall, who had the courage to greenlight this daring rescue mission when others might not have. And when we come back, the most experienced helicopter pilot participating that night puts it all in perspective for us. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.